If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, "Well, I had this career before, but it was a waste." And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, and welcome to the podcast. This is Allison Loudermilk, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, science writer at HowStuffWorks.com.
Today we're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder and Tetris.
Yeah, this is one of the, maybe the only video game that me and you can actually bond over.
Yeah, I'm not much of a gamer, but you are?
Well, I'm certainly not as much as a lot of people I know, but I enjoy playing, stuff like Fallout 3, things of that nature, you know. Generally, I'm more like I'll play a few games a year and really get into maybe one or two games a year.
So you have played Tetris?
Oh,
though.
Yeah. Back in, I had it on like the original NES. And my whole family would play it, and then we would just walk around the house just seeing blocks move around in our head, you know, dreaming at night. And then I had it for PS2 as well, but I didn't really get into it as much for that. Because, you know, it's an awesome game, but there's only so much you can do to it to revamp it, you know.
Right,
you
the
can,
blocks falling down, yeah. Reorganizing them into neat little rows.
Now, there was a really cool Monty Python version of it that came out for PC where, it's like the Bring Out Your Dead. So each block was a dead medieval peasant bent into a certain shape, and they would fall down into this big mass grave, and you would move them around, and they make these squishy noises when they lock into place. That was pretty awesome.
I played a ton of Tetris my senior year of college when my thesis was due.
Yeah.
I just remember thinking about the thesis and then thinking, well, I think I'm just going to play a little Tetris instead on Carolyn, my roommate's computer. And I played a lot of Tetris, so much so that I actually dreamt about it.
Wow. Were you afraid that you would turn in your paper and you'd be like, whew, got that done, and you get it back and be an F, and you look at it, and all you did was just draw Tetris blocks for like 30 pages?
Yeah. I wasn't thinking too much about my academics at that point in my life. Although I should have been. So Tetris has a use outside of the gaming world in keeping us occupied. A bunch of Oxford researchers have postulated that Tetris might be useful for treating post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah, this is pretty exciting. Post-traumatic stress disorder, for those of you who don't know, is a disorder that arises in the wake of a traumatic experience. This could be, a combat situation in a war. It could be experiencing some sort of violence. It could be being in a car wreck. It could be even like just being diagnosed with a really severe illness.
A life-threatening illness, yeah. And children can experience PTSD as well.
Mm-hmm. And you can also get it from just seeing, like if you just see a traumatic car accident, you know,
Or think about something like 9/11. You didn't, you saw it, right? And a lot of, or maybe you were acting in a rescue capacity post 9/11.
Yeah. But even if you just saw it, on the TV, I mean, or just, heard about it, you can still, develop the same disorder.
And if you develop PTSD, your response to the event, according to the mental health Bible, the DSM-4, is going to involve some sort of intense fear or helplessness or horror. And in children, this tends to manifest itself in disorganized or agitated behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And the characteristic symptoms of PTSD are probably ones with which you're familiar, the hallmark one being flashbacks.
Right. Yeah, this is the, everybody's seen this in a movie or something. You'll have the classic example is you have like a Vietnam vet, or maybe it's an Iraqi vet, or Afghanistan vet. And, he comes back home. He's in like just a normal grocery store, right? He's going around his business. He's picking out the groceries, and then somebody drops a can of soup. Hears a loud noise. And then he's suddenly back in the war again. He's falling to the ground and thinks he has to grab for his gun, that kind of situation.
A flashback is a seriously intense experience. I mean, you're there. You're reliving the moment. It's not just like, oh, hey, man, I had a flashback when I saw that guy. It totally reminded me of the 1980s. I mean, a flashback in this sense, in the psychological sense, is a dissociative state. You're not present. It's fully sensory. You're gone.
Yeah.
So if you have these symptoms, they have to be present for more than a month in order for you to be diagnosed with PTSD.
Yeah, it's not the same if you say, like, you see a pretty shocking horror movie and you're like, for a week, you're like, man, that was, the scene keeps running over in your mind. Because I've had that happen before.
Yeah, me too.
But thankfully it goes away and you forget that you ever saw that movie.
Yeah, the CDC actually would probably call that a stress reaction. And it's just something immediately following a traumatic event. But this will go away within 10 days.
Yeah.
Whereas,
and then you just watch Total Recall again, and it happens all over.
Right, so PTSD tends to stick around longer for that, and it impairs your life. It impairs your ability to do your job, your ability to interact with family and friends.
And, of course, this has been in the news a lot last several years because we've, in the States, we've been kind of at war for the last several years. So we have a lot of troops going overseas, encountering violent, traumatic situations, and then coming back home and trying to readjust. Mental health is becoming more and more of a priority, so we're trying to tackle these problems and treat them clinically.
So according to the Associated Press, there's a $50 million five-year study that the Army is conducting, and the Army is doing this in concert with the National Institute of Mental Health. And the idea is to give commanders in the Army a better idea of the troops' mental health. And then there's the other fact that, suicide or, a returning vet who winds up killing himself or killing somebody else is going to draw attention. It's going to draw our attention to the problem. It's going to grab media headlines.
Yeah, and it's not the kind of thing you want in a recruitment brochure, join the Army, be screwed up for life.
So we should emphasize that prevalence rates of PTSD among returning service members, really run the gamut. I saw one fact sheet that estimated, that saw prevalence rates of as low as 1% among returning service members and as high as 60%. And there's also the problem of PTSD kind of being a big tent to fall under, to diagnose.
Does it manifest itself the same way with every patient, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
And there's such a number of reactions that can cause somebody to develop PTSD. So it's just a very sort of wide disorder at this point. The good news is that we actually have some good treatments for full-blown PTSD.
One thing to keep in mind with post-traumatic stress disorder is that it's kind of like getting a stain on a garment, all right? Like, you're at a party, right? And you're drinking grape juice, like we all drink at parties. And you spill it on, like, your white blouse or whatever.
Are you wearing a white blouse at parties?
Yeah, I frequently go to grape juice drinking parties, and I foolishly always wear my best white blouse. But like you spill grape juice on this garment, right?
Right.
Most of our treatment methods that we have are aimed at like the next day, where you're like, oh, I got grape juice on my blouse. It's that stain really seeped in. What can I do to try and get it out? As opposed to, oops, I just spilled grape juice on my blouse. Who has some soda water? Who has something? What can I do to sub this up before it spreads?
Right. So to continue Robert's sort of odd analogy.
That's what I'm here for, odd analogy.
Let's talk about the scenario in which the grape juice has already, stained your shirt and you're, it's full blown.
Mm-hmm.
This is when we're looking to treat full blown PTSD.
One method we have, and this is the most validated, is a cognitive behavioral therapy. with some sort of exposure component. And this can fall under two categories, either like real life exposure or imaginary. Like say you get like one example of real well yeah one example of like a real life situation would be there was a recent episode of This American Life about a guy who came back from Iraq. He's a vet. He's going to college, right?
He's a U.S. vet.
Yeah, he's a U.S. vet, mm-hmm. going to college, and he had just had this post-traumatic stress reaction to being around anybody who looked like they might be an Iraqi. And of course, he's at a college, so there are a number of students that are either, you know, of Iraqi descent or Middle Eastern descent, and he would see these people, and he would just start freaking out a little. You know, he'd start shivering and thinking about ways to, like, eliminate them. He chose, and I think it should be stressed, this was against the advice of his, the guy treating him, at the time, was that he was going to join the, college's Muslim Student Association.
Oh goodness.
Yeah. So that's very much a real life,
exposure,
you know, and a very drastic one. And it,
and an unconventional one.
Yes, an unconventional. And based on the story, it turned out rather well for him. He was able to really grow from that. An example of an imaginary one would be if your therapist like brings you through like a thought exercise, you know, like talks you through an imagined scenario, or you were to engage in some sort of like a virtual reality treatment where you know, you say you have post-traumatic stress from a combat situation.
Okay.
If you played a video game that was tailored to simulate that same situation over again.
So this is a pretty good way to treat PTSD for, mm-hmm. for people out there affected by it. And then there's another one, and this one may sound a little fringy, but it's also gained pretty widespread acceptance, and mm-hmm. it's called EMDR. And the EMDR stands for Eye Movement Desensitization Reprocessing. The originator was somebody by the name of Francine Shapiro back in 1989, so this is a relatively new therapy. Mm-hmm. And it's similar to the cognitive behavioral therapy in that you might find yourself talking through your traumatic event. But the difference is while you're talking through this traumatic event with a therapist who's qualified in this particular kind of treatment, EMDR, your eye is going to be moving bilaterally. It's going to be tracking this light. Or you may find yourself hearing audio tones or, in fact, feeling something like a kind of tapping sensation on your palm. So you're feeling all these external stimuli in addition to, you know, talking about the traumatic event with your therapist. And the idea behind this kind of therapy is that EMDR stimulates the brain's hemispheres and it helps your nervous system reorganize those memories. You're probably not going to just do it in one session, though.
It's more of a process. Like, I'm going to go in for my EMDR session today.
It's really interesting to watch. I would think it would be distracting. It actually sounds a little bit like a video game.
It does, yeah. Watching lights move back and forth, something sort of vibrating in your hands, maybe. I mean, that's, yeah.
So like Robert was saying, these are treatments that we'd use on somebody who's already experiencing the symptoms of full-blown PTSD. But there are early interventions or sort of quick ways to prevent PTSD from developing,
or at least
reduce the incidence of flashbacks.
Yeah, this is the sopping up the grape juice before it spreads method. And one of those is to use morphine.
Yeah.
Which has been used in combat casualties, you know, some situations where, you know, you're having to treat some injury as well.
Yeah, there was a big study on it just recently in 2010 in the New England Journal of Medicine. And basically you had a bunch of guys from the Navy reporting that prompt treatment with morphine cut in half the chances that troops would develop symptoms of PTSD later on.
Of course, it also cuts into your ability to remember what exactly happened in some cases, which can be detrimental if you, say, need to testify in court about what happened. So that's one big downside. The other, of course, being that they're giving you morphine. So, you know, there are plenty of tales of people coming back from, you know, from the war and they're hooked on morphine. You know, there's a whole song, Sam Stone by, I think, John Prine.
Sing it.
There's a hole in daddy's arm where all the money goes, etc. It's like really sad. It's about a guy who comes back, a little kid.
Sounds like a nice song. I mean, not a nice song, but it's a good song.
It's a good song, but it's like the saddest song ever because it's about the guy who comes back from the war, hooked on morphine, and just slowly just kind of goes crazy, and the kid has to watch him.
Like, oh, wow.
Lose his mind.
Robert, you have a good voice.
Well, yeah. Well, but anyway, it's a sad song. Look it up. I'm sure it's on like YouTube or something.
So that's kind of the morphine route, and the downfall is being, right, impaired memory, stuff like that. Now, what about this Tetris? We've been talking a little bit about...
I know. There's not a song about, like, people coming back from the war hooked on Tetris. So, you know, this is there's some possibility here. But how does it work, right?
So this comes to us courtesy of a study published in January 2009 in a PLOS-1, the journal. So what the University of Oxford researchers did was they recruited 40 participants, and they split them into two groups of 20. And all of the participants watched this 12-minute, pretty violent film.
Like a Faces of Death kind of deal, right?
Right. Pretty disturbing scenes of injury and death. And then everyone, all 40 participants, sat idle for this 30-minute structured break. You know, maybe they filled out some paperwork, and they were actually shown short clips of the film just to reinforce what they'd seen.
Just to drive it home.
That sounds terrible. I can't imagine participating in an experiment like that. I remember all sorts of bad stuff that I see in movies for a long, 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 long time. So I don't think this would be the experiment for me. So after this 30 minutes was up, 20 of the people sat idle. You know, they just kind of sat there and pondered that really terrible movie or whatever they pondered. But I'm imagining they probably pondered this movie. And the other 20 played Tetris for 10 minutes.
Well, I know which group I would want to be a part of.
I absolutely know which group I would want to be part of, Tetris. So why did they suggest Tetris? What's the deal behind playing Tetris after you see something traumatic? Why would they possibly do that?
Well, it comes back to the it comes back to what we were talking about earlier about how you play a bunch of Tetris and you start seeing the you see the blocks when you're walking around, or you dream the blocks falling through space, and that's because Tetris has been demonstrated to be a visuospatial task. It draws on mental rotation and the type of processing we recruit when forming mental images. That's key because there are two ways that we form memories.
Okay.
There's the sensory perceptual processing of the trauma, all right? These are the sights and sounds experienced during, you know, this violent encounter or this car wreck, etc. Okay? And then there's the verbal or conceptual processing where you make sense of it. You turn it into a story, my story. So
right.
It's not just like,
you
crash, blam, blam. It's like, oh my God, I was in a car wreck. I could have died. That guy totally wasn't thinking about what he was doing. And like, that's where you form that story, all right?
And this is happening immediately after the traumatic event, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what if something were competing for that memory-making function? What if you were, say, playing Tetris, which is also competing for those visual spatial resources, and your brain can only execute on so many things at once?
All right, here's an experiment for everybody if you want to test this. Tonight, when that special somebody in your life is telling you about their day, try playing Tetris at the same time and see what happens. You're going to probably find that it's really hard to pay attention and or remember what they're telling you.
Yeah, so that's it on a basic level, is that your brain has a limited capacity to make memories of this traumatic event or play Tetris. And if you're actively playing Tetris, chances are it's going to devote its resources to Tetris. And this is what the researchers hypothesized and, in fact, was proven true among the 40 participants.
Mm-hmm.
So what the researchers found was that... after watching this film, they tracked the participants for a week, and in the group that played Tetris, there was a reduced incidence of flashbacks, while in the group that sat quietly, you know, pondering that horrible film, they had a higher number of flashbacks that they experienced.
Wow. So it sounds like this could really be a tool in the future for immediately treating people who are in a traumatic situation. Ambulance arrives on the scene. Guy's a little freaked out. Get him a Game Boy. Fire up the Tetris.
Well, it's interesting you say that because the 30-minute time period, you probably wonder, like, why did they choose 30 minutes for, you know, to play Tetris? Because the researchers figured out that the average time spent waiting in an emergency room is, in fact, 30 minutes.
Oh, really? Okay.
So what if they could get in there before, you know, the emergency room folks could, you know, get to the problem?
Right. Or free Tetris for everybody in the emergency room.
Yeah. I mean, I love Tetris. I used to have it on my phone.
Yeah. I'm thinking about downloading it for my phone.
If I have a really bad day now, I might play a game of Tetris.
Yeah. So that's PTSD and Tetris, but what about other video games?
Oh, right. You wrote that article about, smokers and...
Oh, yeah. I wrote an article for Discovery News a few months back, and it was about an interesting study out of Canada where, like we were saying earlier, one way to get over your stress situation from a combat environment is to put you in a video game that puts you in a combat situation. Well, these guys basically took the same type of video game, like a first-person shooter, except instead of a gun, you have a little hand. Instead of enemies, you have floating cigarettes.
Right.
And so they had a whole bunch of fairly heavy smokers, and they did the same deal where they had one group that was control, one group that was the experimental. And they all came in and they did a bunch of like, let's talk about our addiction kind of thing. And, you know, we're going to, you know, rally together to beat our addictions. And then one group went and did one thing and I think played some sort of a game that was unrelated. And then the other group.
Like Monopoly?
Yeah. And then they ended up killing each other because it's Monopoly and it's a horrible, frustrating game. But no, then the other group, and they weren't smoking, so they're even more irritable. But no, but then the other group, the experimental group, they would play this game where the hand crushes the cigarettes. And they found that the people who, the group that crushed the cigarettes had more, long-term, success, overcoming their addiction than the other group.
Oh, but the interesting part is that, some of the people who played the video game, they actually visualized themselves collecting or hoarding the cigarettes.
And so it didn't work on those guys.
Yeah. They were just trying to, you know, get more smokes.
Yeah. So that was a fascinating, study as well. Yeah, so we ask around some of our coworkers about their experiences with games having a therapeutic effect on them. And we actually found several people, the main game people mentioned was Tetris. So if you have any suggestions, comments, questions, just shoot us an email at sciencestuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.